It was right there, and I let it slip away. Now I go days without eating. On a beautiful dining table I actually like to look at. All I'm left with are should've, would've, could've's, and those just don't tie a room together.
Don't miss Orange Days, Ashley's biggest sale of the year. Get 80 months special financing on in-store purchases of $49.99 or more. Made with your Ashley Advantage Synchrony credit card. March 4th through 10th at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store associate for details.
Welcome, it's Thursday and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. Welcome to Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Remember, tomorrow night we have a really interesting show. John D'Souza is going to join us. The Extra Dimensionals, True Tales and Concepts of Alien Visitors. And he's got some very, very cool stories to share and some interesting insights. Being an actual former FBI investigator and X-Files collector, he's going to tell us some of the more bizarre cases that he's worked on where he has seen aspects of the supernatural come into play and UFOs. So make sure you're here for that show tomorrow, plus a brand new Theater of the Mind. Saturday, let me remind you, I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM, and you can find information if you go to coasttocoastam.com/stations. That'll show you how to find any station in your city, state, and town around the world that you can listen to the show, ways to stream it. You can always check us out on knsiradio.com. That's knsiradio.com. And you can stream the Coast to Coast. That's the live station I do right here in St. Cloud, Minnesota, where I record the show from. So you can listen to the show and stream it right from their active website. So I hope you'll check that out and make it a part of your weekend as well. So you've got 6 days with me this week, all Monday through Friday here on Beyond the Darkness, Saturday on Coast to Coast AM. That's what's going on. Now let's get into tonight's show, Savannah Haunts. Man, do I love visiting the South. And, you know, having family members from Texas and Louisiana and Alabama and Florida, I love to hear of these amazing stories. And one of the towns that I've been to on a handful of occasions and have always had really interesting interactions with is the town of Savannah, Georgia. A beautiful town. It is absolutely idyllic looking and just this gorgeous kind of southern setting for you. And then there is this weird dark underbelly, this creepy kind of feeling that rolls over the town at night when you start hearing all of the ghost stories that are going on. Chris Allen is our guest tonight. He is the founder and CEO of Haunted Savannah Tours in Savannah, Georgia. And it's a walking Savannah ghost tour company. And he takes you around and tells you a lot of these stories. But for those of you that can't travel to Savannah or want to know more about it before you make your way out there, I thought this would be a nice introduction. So welcome to Beyond the Darkness, Mr. Chris Allen. Chris, thanks for joining us this evening.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much, Dave.
Now, Chris, did you grow up in the Savannah, Georgia area?
Unfortunately, I did not. I'm actually from Atlanta area, but I've always loved Savannah. All my friends have always loved Savannah. And this is a place we dreamed about going to one day, and I just made that happen.
Very cool. Now, talk to me a little bit about your background. What got you interested in the paranormal? Did you have your own experiences?
Much like you, I was very, very young. I was probably 2.5, 3 years old. And I remember my parents telling me that I used to see someone in my grandparents' house. I described it as a large man. And every time I saw him, they would smell cigar smoke. Now, no one smoked cigars in the house, of course. Later on, when I was 5, I was going through some pictures of my grandparents, some old family pictures. And I pointed to one and said, "That's that man." And it was my great-granddad, Jack, who died years before I was even born. So that was one of the things that actually started this whole thing out with me.
How did that affect your family? I mean, when you have talked about this big man and suddenly there's a picture of somebody you had no way of knowing and had never seen before, and you identify this is the being that keeps making itself known to you, how did they react?
Well, that's the thing, too. They've always believed in ghosts as well. That's one thing that kind of helped along with that. My grandparents had a large library full of occult and ghost books. I was probably 5, 6 years old and reading about the Warrens and Hans Holzer, and they became my heroes. My granddad used to ghost hunt when he was a younger boy. He would actually go around to these haunted locations and try and find things, he said. So it just kind of came naturally.
When he was looking, what was he seeking? Was he seeking just ghosts, or were there specific things that he would go out in search of?
There were specific things. Like, he would hear about a certain place in town being haunted, so he wanted to go try and find that ghost.
Okay.
Or he grew up in an old log cabin in Alabama, and when he was a young boy, he used to see ghosts walk back and forth by his window, and he would see some come in the front door, and it scared him. And he wanted to go back and try and find out what those things were. So
did he have, was your family open and, sensitive to the paranormal? Were they cool about the exploration of this, or did they seem like they were trying to keep it guarded? I know some of the Southern people, very Bible Belt area, want to try to quiet that aspect down. But how did your family deal with it?
They were always very open about the whole ghost thing. When I started getting into it really big, they were very supportive of it. I remember being 10 years old in my grandparents' house with a 1980s camcorder trying to find the ghosts they said haunted their house at the time. So I've been doing this for a long, long time. But when I started getting into it more, I guess outgoing into it in the community area, where I'm from is Paulding County, Georgia. And it was in the middle of the Bible Belt, kind of, sort of. So I got a lot of fallback from that, from the community, when I kind of came out as an investigator.
Did people just think you were a loon trying to cash in on a trend? How did they really,
They thought I was crazy. They thought I was going to hell. They thought I was evil. But I found a few friends and a few people who were like-minded, and that helped a lot. We would meet weekly and discuss things. It was actually quite fun, but sometimes you had opposition.
I'm curious, too, when you are looking into these claims as a kid and going out, I mean, are you getting advice from family members of, well, don't use the Ouija board, don't burn candles, don't, no bloodletting? I mean, what was the kind of tips and hints they would give you? Or did they just kind of let you flounder your way through trying to figure it all out?
I would flounder my way through. They didn't really have any tips. My mom was messing with Ouija boards when she was a teenager. And she tells stories of how she was using one by herself, and the planchette flew across the room and hit the wall across the way. But that really didn't scare me more than just made me more curious. So I guess the cautionary tales weren't really working.
Okay. All right. Growing up in Atlanta, Georgia, I mean, there's certainly a lot of history in that area. I got to do some investigating of some antebellum mansions out in that area about 10 years ago. And it was really an intriguing investigation for me, because you really feel, I mean, the way they keep these houses up in these historic homes, you feel like you're stepping back into the 1800s. You feel like you're really a part of that time era. And when you're hearing things going on around you, I mean, it's kind of exciting, exhilarating, and terrifying all at once. One of the guys I was with while they were recording ended up picking up, out in the old, shelter out back. There was like I don't want to call it a barn, but I don't know what else they referred to it as. And I know that slaves, spent a lot of time in that area. And while we're talking and people are chatting, you're hearing this kind of Negro spiritualist music chanting. I don't even know how to explain what it was, but it sounded like everything you'd seen in The Color Purple, or, you know, any movie with that kind of time era and feel of them, you know, coming together in song about their situation. And it was just on far enough, like a radio, you know, on a couple blocks away, really loud, and you're picking that up, but we could hear it on the playback, but you couldn't hear it live. And we'd stop and we'd play back, and you'd hear the song continuing as though, you know, even though we paused it, and we'd start it up a few minutes later, you'd hear it deeper into the song, or you'd hear a different song going on. And that to me was such a mind-boggling experience.
It's as close to time travel as you can get right now. Sitting around these big, beautiful old homes and listening to voices from the past, it really is amazing.
Did you have a chance to really kind of investigate places in and around Atlanta before you cut out to Savannah?
Yes, I actually started doing that when I was 16. I met Patrick Burns at Ghost Hounds.
Sure.
Way back in the day. And I was a member of the forum that he had, and that helped me find places to go to investigate there, like the old Marietta Cemetery where they buried JonBenet Ramsey. I've gone there a few times. We used to go to cemeteries all the time because I guess starting out, that's kind of where you go. At 18 is when I actually started doing more of the investigations. We did a bunch of residences, houses. We did businesses. One of the bigger ones we did was Doc Holliday's uncle's house, Mancy. We actually got a great EVP from there saying, "I am Mancy." Class A EVP, amazing things. And I've probably done hundreds of investigations up through Atlanta. My favorite ones have always been the residence houses because I love hearing their stories. I love trying to find out what's going on with them.
What do you feel when you're doing an investigation like that, though, and you start to get something that's not just grandma's ghost knocking around? You start to realize that you're really peeling back into the layers of time and hear things like, you know, slaves singing and chanting. Does that affect you? I mean, that really, it was a punch to the gut to me in the sense that it was like, you know, you feel transported at that moment. Do those have more impactful feelings for you? Do you run into much of that out in the southern area doing these investigations? Or are they more of the local, you know, grandma, grandpa, mom, pop kind of ghosts?
Well, we get a lot of that as well. Well, we have gotten an investigation here at Tondi's Tavern in Savannah where they used to hold slaves. And we believe we've gotten one of those slaves on EVP begging for help. And when you hear that, just the sound in their voices, it really tears your heart out. You know, it really can affect you tremendously.
What do you do in those situations then? Do you, Christy, do you try to clear the area? Do you do anything to try to bring some kind of peace? Or is it more just where you feel like you're just witnessing what's going on? You know what I'm asking? I know it's hard to put this into the proper terms because, again, I want to be respectful. But, I mean, do you consider yourself more of an observer, or do you try to involve yourself into that timeline?
I tend to be more of the investigator. Mm-hmm. I don't really do the whole sage and the cleansings. That's not my thing. I just want to be there and observe and record.
Okay.
And collect the stories.
The feeling, though, when I heard, you know, the chanting, singing, it makes you realize, again, are we just listening through the veil of time and we're hearing what was going on, or are they still there? Is there a reason that they stay in these situations? Do you ever get any answers when you ask why they're still there?
Well, I'll tell you a one that actually really made me actually cry out loud, honestly. We were called in to do a house investigation, and because they thought they had just a basic ghost in the house, if you want to call it ghost basic. But we were using a spirit box. Now, usually I don't put a lot of stock into spirit boxes because it's radio waves coming through, but this one really upset me. We had a woman come through the ghost box, and she was crying for her husband and her kid. And the lady at the house recognized this voice as her neighbor who died in a car crash down the street 6 months earlier. And the very last thing we got from this ghost box mm-hmm. was this heart-wrenching, oh my gosh, it was so terrible. She you could tell there is pain in her voice.
Right.
You could tell she was, and she said, "Tell him I love him."
Oh.
And that kind of, that's why I lost it, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you can understand that. I mean, when you're getting that type of connection. And then did you pass a message on? That's got to be a hard moment, too. How do you go next door and tell the neighbor, hey, by the way, we think this message is for you?
We did not do that. We actually gave the person we were doing the investigation for the recording of what we got. And because she knew the family better than we did,
right.
We let her handle that. I never heard of what came of it. I wish I could go back, but I didn't really know them personally, so it'd be kind of strange for me to go and say, hey, how'd this go?
Right.
But yeah, that's one of the ones that really just...
Was the message eventually given?
She said she did.
Okay.
But I don't know how they took it. I don't know how they took it.
All right. Well, let's start to dig into the histories of the areas that you've investigated. And out of Atlanta, you know, just real quickly in wrap up, did you ever get into a situation where you felt like you were really up against something dark and malevolent?
Oh, for sure. Have you ever heard of Euharlee, Georgia?
No, I'm not familiar.
It is home of the oldest covered bridge in Georgia, and it has many, many old homes and buildings around it as well. And we actually were called in to help do a ghost tour there one night. So in order to do the ghost tour, they let us go in and investigate each one of these buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in this old 1800s general store. It's empty, of course. And it's been abandoned. And we have the spirit box going, and we get this growl come through it. And as soon as this growl came through this box, something hit my friend Billy in the head. We looked down, and it was a screw. So we had things being thrown at us along with this growl. That made me very uncomfortable. So we left for a while, came back after an hour, and things had calmed down. But that's the situation you don't want to be in.
Now, do you believe that that's really something evil, or do you think it's just them trying to get your attention?
Whatever it is, I don't want to be hit in the head.
You don't want to ask that question too closely and find out, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. When you're dealing with these places, do you think is it a pissed off malevolent ghost, or do you think that it is more into the realm of the demonic?
I really do. When I first started doing this, I didn't believe in the demonic. I didn't believe in the demons. But the more I've done it, the more I believe. The more things I see, the more I believe. Such as Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee. The clinic area has this heavy, heavy feel. And we have seen red glowing eyes down the dark hallways and have been scratched and bitten in this clinic area. Is it a very malevolent ghost? Maybe. Is it demonic? I think more toward that. It has this certain, I can't even describe, a certain feeling to it. Does that make sense?
No, I get it. And I've been in places like that where you can sense there is some kind of dark presence, or it's this overwhelming thick feeling. And it's not just like when you walk in on somebody's house after they've had a fight, you can walk in and kind of sense that, ugh, this just feels icky in here, right? There's a difference
exactly.
Between that kind of negative from just human interaction and walking into a place where, you know, I was at the Stanley Hotel, and we were at the concert hall, and it was broad daylight. Chris, broad daylight. We're running an event, and I went downstairs to take a shortcut to get one of the speakers. And as I'm coming down, there's this electrical room where a lot of weird activity has happened. Chairs have flipped in front of us. Tables have jumped and flipped onto the ground in front of us. We've seen things. It's just a really creepy room. So as I'm walking down the hall, there's like darkness spilling out of this room. And I can't explain any more than that. You could see the other end of the hall, but it was like this black ink shadowy thing was out in the hallway pouring out of the room. And I got this overwhelming terrified, I mean, like knee-knocking five-year-old little girl feeling in me, you know, seeing this. And I just stopped in my tracks and I thought, dude, stop it. You're psyching yourself out. It's just the dark from that room. This is a low-lit hallway and it's just darkness. That's it. You're fine. Cross through it. And I got near it and I was like, there's no way in hell I'm walking through that. There is something seriously off about that. And I went nowhere near it. And again, it was so silly. And I walked down around later and I could walk right through it and that feeling was gone. But it was palpable. You could feel that there was just something so off and so not right about that particular place that I wanted nothing to do with it.
I know exactly what you mean. There are certain times a hallway in the clinic or the hospital looks lit up just fine. You can walk through it no problem. But other times when it has that feeling, it's complete darkness down there. Just complete darkness and complete fear.
Isn't it weird, though? You think, okay, what the hell is this doing here? This wasn't a place of, you know, bloodletting. This wasn't a place of demonic worship. Why in this old school would this, or in this old hospital, why would this being be here? What is its purpose? And that's always kind of what unnerves me most is, you know, it makes you worry that, you know, when people die, are there dark forces there to gather them, to keep them from going where they need to? That part has been one of the biggest enigmas for me in investigating and probably one of the more unnerving aspects. Sometimes why I take off time, long periods of time from investigating.
I understand that. Like, in Paul and Kenny, where I'm from, there's an old cemetery down this long dirt road called the Old White Oak Cemetery. And we have gotten EVPs from this place of women saying that they can't cross over. And if you ask them why, they'll just say one word, Jack. Now, Jack has been a legend there for a long time, of this man who haunts the cemetery, this tall, dark shadow. So I don't understand why this one thing would be preventing them from going over or wherever they're going to. But I understand what you mean, how it's just, what are they there for? Why are they there?
Yeah, it's the most unnerving aspect of this, and especially when you sometimes hear from the spirits when you're doing EVP recording or these spirit box sessions, and they will appear to tell you something is keeping them there.
Yes.
That was that's a terrifying, frightening, you know, when my mother was passing away in November and we were in the hospice, it felt very nice and light and beautiful in this place. There was no sense of darkness, but I remember I just kept praying over her and over that room that it stayed clear, that she had a clear path to wherever she needed to go when life was over. Because I just, that kind of, and I, you know, I always tell people that if you want to kind of feel some sense of peace during this transition period, is pray for the white light to bask that room, to, you know, golden light, whatever, and be the only, energy that is there for your loved one, because I'm unbelievably unnerved by these dark forces that appear in these locations that don't seem to be their prisons, maybe because some people are just broken and dark. But when you're in hospitals and you're into these things, it seems weird that there are these overlords. And I don't like to over-dramatize it, but I don't know what else to call it. These dark spirits that seem to keep other spirits from moving on or from going forward.
Well, there are even reports in cemeteries a lot where people see this dark shadow all the time in different cemeteries kind of roaming around. What is that dark shadow? Why is he staying in a cemetery? What are they doing there? Is that death maybe personified? Is it a demonic gatekeeper? Who knows?
Now, if you see this figure yourself, Chris, you're in a, savannah. There's that beautiful, cemetery there. If you were walking through there and you saw this dark figure, this mist, as an investigator, would you go after it? Would you try to interact with it? Or would you just stay far enough back and watch it?
Personally,
right.
I've been through so much. I would just go straight for it and try to interact with it. The fear is gone now. That's beyond fear. I the curiosity is more than the fear. I go in full force and try and find out what it is.
What do you do? What is your plan of action if it turns around and starts to come towards you? Are you a dude run kind of guy, or are you going to stand your ground and see what happens next?
Always stand your ground. Always stand your ground.
Not me, pal. Right. Black figure starts hauling ass at me through the cemetery. I'm out of there. I'm pushing my friends down and my kids and anything that's in my way.
I'm the kind of guy that walks to abandoned basements in the dark by myself with no flashlight.
Yeah, I love that stuff. Yeah, but you put me in a cemetery with what could be death roaming about. We don't need to shake hands. I don't need a button. I don't want to commiserate about life and the afterlife. I just want to get the hell out of there. But I'll give you credit. The cemetery areas are not where I want to be hanging out at all, live or dead. we've got so much to talk about. I know I want to get into Savannah Haunts and start talking to you about some of the most historic places. Sorrel Weed House, just one of my favorite locations, and I've had personal experiences in. But so many more great places to talk about there. And dark, sad stories. Let's chat about that when we return. When we come back, though, we've got so much more to cover. We do have a link up for our guests, so you can go check out Chris Allen and Savannah Haunts. Keep up with that and know what's going on. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more Savannah Haunts, Deep South haunted spots you want to know about because you're tuned in to Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
And we're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. Beyond the Darkness is on the air. And remember, if you like what you hear on the show, you want to get books from our guests, movies from our guests, you want to get anything, make sure that you use our link over at podcastone.com. Go to podcastone.com, go to the killer deal link. When you click on that link, it's going to take you in and you will be able to see all of the different banners for the shows. Click on our banner for Beyond the Darkness. When you click on that, it'll show you all of our advertisers. Please visit our advertisers. They help keep us on the air. One in particular is Amazon.com. You're going to buy stuff. Everybody uses Amazon.com for whatever purposes you need, whether you need glow-in-the-dark condoms, fresh, fully woolly socks, or if you want to get yourself some food delivered to the house, maybe t-shirts, books, CDs, whatever, then when you use Amazon.com, bookmark one of those links that we supply you with, either Canada, the UK, or America, and make sure you use that link every time because just a small percentage of every sale goes a long way to help keep all of the administrative costs on this show down so that we can make the show available to you with limited commercial breaks, and you can get an opportunity to get to listen to these shows free. Remember to subscribe to it, never miss an episode so that you've got it in your podcast file, and never miss a minute. And because of all of the purchases you make through Amazon.com, I do it, you do it, neighbors, friends, relatives. When you're doing that, and especially around the holidays, Easter's coming up, you want to get some cool, nice clothes for it, or you want to get some Easter wear for around the house, then make sure that you use these links. You don't pay any extra. I want you to be aware of that. If it costs $20 on Amazon.com, you're still paying it $20 only using our link. It's the same exact price, same exact cost to you. However, a very small portion is given to us as kind of an affiliate fee for helping to point you towards them. So please make sure you utilize that because it does go a long way to help keep your favorite paranormal show on the air and us too. Let's get back to it. Chris Allen is our guest. We're going to dive into Savannah, Georgia now. Chris Allen is the founder and CEO of Haunted Savannah Tours in Savannah, Georgia. And he's here to talk with us this evening about some of the more famous and haunted spots, some of the creepy legends and lore. And we've got a bunch. You were telling me off air, we got to talk about the curse of Savannah. We also have to talk about the hags and skin stealers. That sounds terrifying. Let's get into that a little bit later. But start me off with one of my favorite places I've been to a few times now, the Sorrel Weed House. Talk to our listeners about this amazing history and the haunting that takes place there, please, Chris.
All right. The house was actually the very first house built on Madison Square in 1838 for a man named Francis Sorrel and his wife Matilda. Now, Matilda was his second wife. His first wife was Lucinda, who died of yellow fever, and just happened to be Matilda's older sister. That's how things worked back then. They were kind of kept it in the family, so to say. Now, they had six children. Most of them died. Moxley Sorrell was one that lived, and Moxley became the youngest general during the Civil War. It was 1860. The House is known for having many, many parties. That's what they love. They love to have parties. Matilda was a very outgoing social person. And they had this one slave they named Molly. Now, you can't find Molly in the census records. You have to look in the tax records. She was a 22-year-old mulatto slave girl who was very special to the family. She actually had her own room in the carriage house upstairs. Now, during this party in 1860, Matilda went to try and find Francis, and she couldn't find him anywhere. She looks over the house, looks outside where the partygoers are at, and decides that she knows who'll know. Molly knows. She walks up the stairs to the carriage house, opens Molly's door, and there's Francis and there's Molly in the throes of passion. And that was the very last straw for Matilda. Probably in grief, probably crying, she ran back inside the home, the main house, walked up the stairs to their bedroom on the second floor balcony. And some say she was pushed, some say she fell off or jumped off. I believe that she jumped off committing suicide. And family letters tell us that when she fell to the ground, she became just a mess. So if you can imagine how that would look. 2 weeks later, they did find Molly hung in the carriage house from the rafters.
Oh.
It's not sure if she was killed or if she committed suicide herself. But either way, you have a suicide or a death within 2 weeks of each other. And it's a really tragic time for the house. Over the years, the house has gone through several families, the Weed family, and now it's owned by a man named Steve Bader, who's trying to restore the home to its full glory. And they do tours inside the house now. I'm actually sitting with Annie Oath. She actually works at the Sorweed House, and she does tours there as well. She has experiences there. This house is extremely haunted. They have reports from the slaves who used to live in the basement of the home of these ghosts wearing red coats walking through the basement. Now, why red coats? The house itself sits on foundations of the British barracks that were there during the Revolutionary War in Savannah, the Siege of Savannah. Wow. So we have that. They found bones of dead British soldiers underneath this house. So we have all this along with the Molly and Matilda story. This, I believe, is the most haunted house in Savannah, period. We get things there almost every time we go.
Right. Yeah, that is, it's a crazy place. One of the first times I was there, we did some EVP in the sitting room upstairs, middle floor there. And it sounded like a party was going on around us whenever we would play back the recording. Very strange. We caught crying up in Molly's room, up in that area where she hung herself. That was very sad. We were there with John Oliver, the medium and psychic, who was part of Patrick Burns' show, Haunting Evidence, on True TV. And that was really heavy. I mean, he was very overwhelmed by the moment while we were in there. And just a fascinating place to visit. And we caught one of the strangest EVP I've ever heard being down there in the basement. We were talking to somebody that we believed worked there, and we said, did you live here? Did you work here? And you hear this voice kind of hiss, yes, but it's my voice. There are four or five of us standing in a circle doing this EVP session. It's dark, but not so dark you can't see each other, and you certainly would hear somebody answer the question. So as we're asking, did you work here? Did you live here? People would have turned to me and gone, why did you say that? But there was none of us speaking, but on the recording, it sounds like my voice hissing back, yes, over the recorder. So very strange atmosphere. And it's a very electric place when you're there. I don't know how else to explain it. I mean, would you say electric kind of encapsulates
electric,
it?
That's a good word, yeah. That's what I would use for it as well. It feels alive.
Right. Yeah, it does.
Like you're never alone.
I did, standing in the back courtyard between the house where Matilda died and Molly hung herself, I was just randomly taking pictures of the area. And, you know, I'm not a fan of orb pictures. I belittle them as much as I possibly can on the air. So I know there are people that still swear by it, that they're spirits, but I'm just not convinced. I've seen it too easy to reproduce, and I just know how it works. but I was snapping photographs, and I caught, Chris, what I can only... It looks like a fairy. It almost looks like the FTD florist man, all lit up. I was taking pictures in the backyard, and they had this black matte garbage can, outdoor can. And as I'm taking a series of three pictures, there's nothing in the first one, nothing in the third one, but in the second one, there is this little lit-up-looking man or fairy like it's running. It is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And it's very small, but very clear. And you know on pictures, when you start to enlarge them, how the pixelization will make them distort, it actually gets clearer when you enlarge the picture. And you can see this light anomaly that looks like a little running man. So that place, it just holds a special place in my heart because of the weird activity that I've seen happen there on numerous occasions. So, that place blew me away. So, again, I can't say it's a fairy. I don't believe in fairies so much, but I can tell you that it has that look to be some kind of fairy or the FTD florist guy, that little Mercury-looking fella booking across their backyard. Very, very cool. I mentioned Bonaventure Cemetery earlier that, you know, that's one of the more famous spots there. Is there really any haunting that goes on in that cemetery? I mean, it's a beautiful, gorgeous, gothic old cemetery with a lot of history. But is there any haunting that is known to occur?
There are stories in every cemetery. People see the shadows. They see strange black dogs in the cemetery, which they call hellhounds. But really the only haunting I can think of is the old caretaker's house. It was early 1900s. There was a caretaker for the cemetery there living with his wife, and he had over a lady. They weren't together, this lady and him, but he just had her over as a friend. But unfortunately, the wife thought that he was cheating on her. And as he was sitting at his desk, she came behind him with an axe and sliced through his head.
That's taking it a little extreme.
So the people do see him still in the house walking around in his nice suit and top hat. But that's kind of really the only haunting that I really heard about Bonaventure. Most of it is just the basic things that you can kind of shrug off a little bit as being a shadow or the way the tree moves sometimes.
Right.
But that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's a place. Boy, what a brutal ending. Maybe divorce would be better. I don't know. I'm old fashioned. But now,
I think there's a bit more to it than that, but that's the story.
One of the more hopping places out there is Colonial Park. What is the history of Colonial Park and what type of activity takes place there?
All right. Colonial Park is actually one of my favorite places to go to. We always get some great stuff from there. It is it's not Savannah's oldest cemetery. It's Savannah's oldest visible cemetery. You see, Savannah is a 2.2 square mile historic district, and it is a vibrant city on top, but underneath is a true necropolis. They have built over the cemeteries and built over this more cemeteries and on, but Colonial Park is unique because it's still there. It was established in 1750 and lasted until 1856. Now, most of the tombstones you find there, they're not actually all this there. The problem is Abercorn Street runs down beside the cemetery and has a sidewalk there as well, and there's a fence around the entire property. The problem is that fence doesn't show the actual border. It goes about a block past that under the streets and buildings across the street. You can see it walking along the sidewalk, how every now and then you'll see the bricks will have they'll depress into grave size holes. It's where over time the coffins have either rotten away or sunken down, so the bricks on top will sink down. So people walking across this, they have no idea they're walking on graves. During the Civil War, it was Sherman's March to the Sea, 1864, and it was the coldest year on record here in Savannah in December. Mm-hmm. And when they got here, there really wasn't a lot of fighting going on. We kind of just retreated, let them have the city. Now, you have 60,000 men in this little city. Where are they going to camp at? Any ideas?
The park? The cemetery? Those areas?
Colonial Park, yep.
Right.
that was the biggest open field in the middle of the city. And these young men, these soldiers, they got really bored. So they would use the tombstones as target practice. They would engrave new dates in these tombstones. If you go look around, you'll see some people who live 100 years old or even 1,000 years old. There's one man, he was 42. His son was 78 and his wife was 12 because they changed the dates.
Real mature.
Yeah. Well, when they left, they actually left behind a pretty big mess. A lot of the tombstones were on the ground, missing. Some were broken in half. So they took what they could and put them on the very back wall of the cemetery, kind of like a decoration on the wall, almost like refrigerator magnets on the brick wall. It was kind of just lying there.
Weird.
Unfortunately, we don't know where they belong to because records have been lost. Now, one really cool thing about the cemetery is it's a very famous video called The Colonial Park Ghost Boy. Have you ever seen that one, Dave?
Yes. Yes, I have. But for our listeners that have not, feel free to enlighten them.
All right. A young man from Akron, Ohio was visiting Savannah on vacation with his family. It was December 31st, 2008, and the exact time was 5:38 p.m., right before the cemetery closed down. And as tourists do, he had his video camera out taking some video and pictures of the cemetery and his trip to Savannah. When through the viewfinder of the camera, the little video viewfinder, he notices a strange little boy running across cemetery grounds. And what was different about this boy is he didn't have any details to him. He was very misty, all white. The other people in the video, the other tourists in the video, you could see their faces, you could see their clothes. This boy, you couldn't. He runs behind some tombstones, and then you see him jump into a tree limb that's 10 feet off the ground. And as some tourists are walking by with their stroller, he jumps and falls on top of them. They didn't even look. They didn't even notice. They couldn't see it.
Huh.
Now this video was sent off to experts in the field and videographer experts. It was shown on the news and in his hometown. And they all came back inconclusive. They couldn't figure out what it was. It was not tampered with. There's no special effects going on. People said it was a flag waving up and down. But what about the boy running?
Right.
Other people say it was moss falling off the tree. Then again, what about the boy running? And even if it was moss, it had been a good-sized moss. If that was actually moss falling off a tree, I would look and see what that was. But these people walking by didn't even bother them.
Right, and if that big a clump that looked like a child size dropping down on them, that would certainly be something that would grab their attention.
It's human nature. You would look that way at least.
Right.
He even sent the video to James Randi. Oh, James Randi, to win his $1 million challenge.
Right.
And he had this. He should have won, but James Randi, I guess he has this. What would you call it? Like a fail-proof plan. Where he came back and he said he could not conclude nor disprove that it was a ghost. So I guess...
That was enough for him, huh?
Yeah, that was enough for him.
Wow. Well, but, you know, that's still intriguing that he can, you know, he was left still wondering.
Yeah, it's still a very controversial video.
And is this video online still? Is there places to find it?
It is on YouTube. It sure is.
Okay. All right, very cool. So go check it out. Is there any specific title for it?
Just Colonial Park Ghost Boy is what I always look up.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Maybe we'll try to include a link for that as well with the show. All right. Let's dig a little deeper into some of the other weird stories out there. How about Moon River? Tell me a little bit about Moon River.
Moon River. Moon River is over on Bay Street, and it was the very first hotel here in Savannah, built in 1821, called the City Hotel. And it was a hotel and post office. And, of course, they had a bar inside. Now, the most interesting thing that happened in Moon River back in the day was 1832. There was a feud between James Stark and a city physician named Philip Midas. They had been drinking. There were words exchanged. So Midas leaves and comes back, and when he walks into the bar, he shoots Stark dead. He was acquitted, of course, because it was better to have a physician than a James Stark. But to this day, it is one of the most haunted places in Savannah. Bartenders will have bottles thrown at them. Patrons will have glasses thrown off their tables as they're trying to eat. In the basement, they have what they call him Toby. He's a very malevolent spirit named Toby in the basement. When Ghost Adventures went there, they actually claimed that Toby possessed Nick, I guess. And that actually is a story going on. People go down there, they feel like they're being possessed. They have their feeling of being taken control of. Now, the basement's creepy, but the upstairs is the worst. That's where things get violent. People get pushed downstairs, scratched, their hair pulled. Whatever is upstairs, very, very violent. In fact, 1990, they're doing a renovation, and the foreman's wife was pushed down the stairs, breaking her arm. And to this day, the upstairs remains unfinished because the foreman quit.
Yeah, and that's just it, right? I mean, there's nothing more they can do with it. Have they tried to clear it? Have they tried to do anything to, you know, make it more livable and acceptable?
Honestly, I haven't heard of them trying to clear it. It's now used as storage for different things, such as the plates and the just dry storage.
Sure.
But they have not tried to make it livable since.
Huh. What a strange deal, especially in a place like that, so historic. All right, let me hear, what is the curse of Savannah? We just did a show on curses a week ago. I'm always interested to hear how people believe in a location is cursed. How did it get that way?
Oh, right. 1820 was a pretty bad year for Savannah. It started out with a fire, and this fire destroyed over half the city. And then yellow fever set in, and yellow fever was really, really a terrible thing that year. In Colonial Park Cemetery, where they have the mass graves of victims from yellow fever buried there, they have a sign saying nearly 700 people died. The actual count was 666. But of course, being in the South, we're not going to put 666 on a sign, so it's nearly 700. And everyone kind of just, if they weren't dying, they were leaving town because of fear of death. So a reporter from the newspaper, he was a very kind of bitter man. He wasn't doing very well as a reporter. He left Savannah that year, but his last column in the paper was a curse to Savannah. And he put, "I curse you, Savannah, with a curse that is far worse than all curses, to remain as you are."
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Think about this, though.
Right.
Remain as you are, unchanging. Does that mean whoever dies here must stay here as well?
Oh. Interesting, yeah. So that might explain why there's so much activity that stays in Savannah.
That's part of it, yeah.
I think the curse is that smell.
the marsh smell?
Holy cow. I don't know what it was, but there were a few days out there in Savannah when it just hit you like a wall, man. It was wow. It's a beautiful place to visit, and the smell's not continual, but when I first got there, it was hot and muggy that day, but that smell, whatever it was, out in the air just hung over the town. That might be the actual curse.
Well, on a good night, you can actually smell the paper plant from Brunswick area. It's about 50 miles away, but on a good night, you can smell the paper plant.
Does that make it a good night then?
Well, touche, sir.
Yes. I think that might be on a bad night you can smell
on
that.
On a bad night.
Yeah.
Yeah. But on a good wind, I don't know.
Yeah. A good, strong, stiff wind. So that's
there
that's
we go.
That. All right. Now, we're coming into the end here. Let me hear about the hags and skin stealers.
All right.
Excited you get. This is like the weirdest topic aspect of it. And you're like, oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. I live for this stuff.
Yep.
This is my life.
Okay.
As you know, Savannah has a very large, I don't want to say voodoo tradition, but people think of voodoo. That's what they think of. It's more of a root doctors and conjurers traditions here in Savannah.
Okay.
Very underground, not like New Orleans where it's seen in every street corner, but it is a very real religion here. Now, they believe that the hags and the skin stealers inhabit the swampy areas of town, and they come out and they try to take over someone's body by literally taking over their skin. Like, you will see someone that you know, and you know they're not there, but you see them, and they may smile at you, and they may have more teeth than usual, or something's wrong with their eyes. They're all black. That's the scary part about skin stealers. They're there to take away your essence. Now, the Ebenezer Creek, Ebenezer Swamp area of Savannah, just north of Savannah, has a very strange history with it. That's why we think these hags are coming through this area. During the Civil War, during the March to the Sea, General Jefferson Davis had to cross this creek. But it was so wide and moving so swiftly, they couldn't just cross it regularly. They had to build a pontoon bridge. So they did that, and they had hundreds of fugitive slaves behind this army that were following them. So he made sure that his army got across first. Then they cut the bridge apart so the slaves couldn't follow. And the problem was they heard battle from behind them, sounds of combat, and they got really nervous. So if you can imagine this huge throng of people pushing into the river, trying to escape, most of them died. Men, women, children, and to this day, you can still hear babies crying from this creek.
Oh, that's horrific.
They
see. Do you hear this DVP style, direct voice phenomena, meaning you don't need recorders or audio devices to hear it? Do you just hear these sounds naturally, or is it always when you play back a recording or a video?
These are heard naturally. These are heard with the ear, not through recording at all. Now, the hag phenomenon. Have you ever woke up at night and you can't move, you're paralyzed?
Well, a couple times in college, but I think that was my fault.
Call it
the old hag syndrome, sure.
Exactly. They call it sleep paralysis. And that is described scientifically as your brain shuts down your body so you won't act out your dreams and hurt yourself while you're asleep. Well, the problem is, we call them hags here in Savannah. And these things have a name all over the world. In China, they call him the oppressor, if that tells you a bit about what these things are. And they begin off very kind of smooth. You wake up, you're paralyzed. You can't feel anything. You're looking around. And you feel someone in the room with you. And if you look next to your bed or in a corner of your room, you will see this tall, dark shadow, blacker than black, darker than dark, staring at you. Now, the thing is, it goes by so quickly, but because you're paralyzed, it feels like forever. That's what we call the hags. Now, there are thousands and thousands of cases reported of this hag phenomenon all over the world. If they were just a hallucination or pareidolia, like they say in science, that may be true in some cases. But how can all these thousands of people hallucinate the same exact thing every single time?
Right.
There has to be something more to that.
Huh.
And the conjurers believe that because the swamp, Ebenezer Creek, was such a mass death, all these things happened there, they believe the hags are attracted to the area and come through this world from there.
Really? So that's what that's what attracts them to this area to do what they do. Do these beings, I mean, is there any record of them attacking or hurting or possibly even killing someone?
Not killing someone outright, but this is the only thing that they try to exercise and it cannot go away. It follows you. It's not to a place. Once it attaches to you, it will follow you. And I have heard a story of a lady in Alabama who was attacked when she was 12 years old. And it followed her entire life. And it is believed these things feed off of negative energies. So it tries to put those situations in your life to keep feeding off of you. And she just went through all kinds of problems until finally, age 46, committed suicide.
Hmm.
So it's kind of an indirect.
What a tragedy. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there beings or creatures that you find in your area that seem to be specific to Savannah? I mean, we just talked about the hags, but, you know, a lot of people have seen different variations of that.
Nothing specific. I did talk to a guy once, but he was drunk, so I can't believe anything he says.
Wait, there's drunk people in Savannah, Georgia?
Oh, no, there never is, especially this weekend, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. I would guess. But what about, like, the cryptids? Are there anything that falls into that realm for you guys in that area?
As far as Savannah itself, I haven't ever heard of anything in particular, But 30 miles south is the Altamaha River.
Uh-huh.
And we do have an Altamaha River monster that's been seen many, many times. A 30-foot-long Nelly serpentine monster. The people say, well, they'll see in the river, of course. On video, never. Of course, it's never on video, is it?
No. And they're always moving, so it's blurry and junky, and it does you no good anyway, right?
I think Bigfoot is blurry anyway. That's why we can't get a picture of him.
He's just naturally blurry. Right, yeah, he's just blurry, naturally blurry. What is considered to be the most haunted location in Savannah?
The Sorrelweed House, of course.
Right.
Next to that, I would say Colonial Park. And beyond that, Moon River. Those are my top three in Savannah as most haunted. We have investigated Tondi's Tavern and the Savannah Theater. We didn't get too much in those places. The Savannah Theater was interesting. We only got one thing there. Now, the story about the theater is it is the oldest continuously running theater in America. And throughout its history, it's always had a problem with fires being set. Not by people, but unexplained fires. It'd always be in these small, round, just round shape, circular shape. So we were actually on the stage, and we had a thermal camera pointing at the floor, and we noticed this one circular spot on the floor was very, very hot. Now, our first thought was there's probably a pipe under the flooring, right?
Right.
We go under there, and it's hollow. There's nothing there.
Hmm.
I could not explain that very hot spot.
When it comes to, like, the dark circles, you talked about voodoo and that kind of idea and conjuring. What is the job of the conjurers in your area? Did they ever call upon dark forces? Was that part of the legend and lore of the area?
Oh, yeah. You had the Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil story. That was a very true story. Minerva in the book was a very real person, but her name was changed for the book. Her real name was Valerie Bowles. Now, she was the wife of the infamous Dr. Buzzard. Now, it was been told that she helped Jim Williams through his trials after the murder of Danny Hansford. And I have had talked to people who knew her in life, saying they would go to her house and say they'd want someone to be sick or someone to die. She would do those kinds of things for people.
Wow. And using that kind of dark force on them. For people that aren't familiar with the Garden of Good and Evil, what's the genesis of that whole story, the whole encapsulation of it?
Oh, right. It was, well, Jim Williams bought the Mercer Williams house in 1969. And Jim Williams was a very rich antiques dealer and preservationist here in Savannah. Basically, if it wasn't for him, you wouldn't have Savannah like it is today. He restored over 60 homes downtown just himself. It was 1981. He was having a Christmas party at his home when his, some say lover, who knows, I like to think it was his lover. Danny Hansford came into his room and they had an argument. And the story goes that Jim Williams shot him dead. Of course, he was charged with murder. He went through four trials and was found innocent of all crimes and was acquitted in 1989. Now, the reason he was acquitted was twofold. When the coroner came to get Danny Hansford, they didn't bag his hands. So that kind of threw everything out the door. And pictures of the crime scene show Jim Williams' cat walking through the crime scene itself. So that kind of threw all that out. So any evidence against Jim Williams was just tampered with. It was messed with. Now, 6 months after he was acquitted of the murder, Jim Williams died in the house of heart failure in the same room he shot Danny Hansford.
Well, that's interesting.
Now, the story behind that might be that he did use Minerva or Valerie Bowles as a real name. He went with her, and he believed highly in voodoo. That was his thing. He believed in magic. And he used her to help him get acquitted off his murder charge. She would actually, what they call dusting, the opposite lawyers and the judge, where she put a magic dust on their chairs trying to curse them. And he did win. So did it work? Maybe.
Wow.
But why did Jim Williams die? People who I've talked to who've known him said he was walking around town that same day earlier, and he was just fine. But you see, Minerva never got paid for her services. Now, it's called a blue route. And what we believe happened, or I believe happened, is she went to his home, and you put this on something you touch every day, like a door handle or your car door handle, things you are guaranteed to touch. It's called a blue route. It is a mixture of an actual blue route found here in the Lowcountry area, graveyard dirt, and bones. And they grind it all into a fine, dusty powder. Now, when you touch this blue root, it is very poisonous. It'll get into your system through the skin and cause a heart attack, the same thing Jim died from. By the time they do an autopsy, because it's a natural ingredient, it's out of your system, and they can't find any trace of poisons. It's just a heart attack.
Wow. Well, thanks for putting out the ingredients and recipe for making that. I'm sure that's going to go over big.
Oh, there's a book online. It's called Blue Roots.
Blue Roots. Good.
Find it on Amazon under your link.
Yeah, that's no. Don't buy it from my link. I don't need the flashback karma slap for that. Hey, Chris, thanks. It's such a pleasure, and what a great rich history of the area. If people want to book a tour and come on out and meet you, how do they do that?
It is hauntedsavannahtours.com. That's the best place to go to. You can book them online or call at 912-445-5027.
All right, you heard about it here. That's it for tonight, kids. Tomorrow, we're back. John D'Souza, my guest, he is a former FBI agent. We'll talk about the extra dimensionals, concepts, and true tales of alien visitors. And then again, I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM, the biggest overnight talk show, this Saturday night. So make sure you tune in and check that out. To find stations and times in your area, visit coasttocoastam.com/stations, and you'll find all of that information. Again, that's coasttocoastam.com/stations. I host the show 2 to 3 times a year. Just celebrated our 4th year of being one of the guest hosts of this remarkable show. And if you want, you can sign up to become a Coast Insider. It's very inexpensive. For a 1-year subscription, breaks down to 15 cents a day, and it gives you access to 5 years of past archives. That means even the shows I was a guest on, you can listen to, and all of the shows I've guest hosted over the last 4 years. They're all available to you, plus all of the fantastic interviews from George Norrie, George Knapp, Jimmy Church, Connie Willis, Richard Syrett, and more. They're all there on the site. And if you like what you hear on Darkness Radio's Beyond the Darkness, you're going to love Coast to Coast AM. Go support our buddies George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM, the best in overnight talk radio. As a matter of fact, tonight, it is Health and Longevity and Secret Societies with guests Christian Wild and Nick Redfern. So you can check it out tonight and listen in with George Norrie, the king of late night talk radio. That's it for this evening's show. Remember to tune in tomorrow for more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
It was right there, and I let it slip away. Now I go days without eating on a beautiful dining table I actually like to look at. All I'm left with are should-haves, would-haves, could-haves, and those just don't tie a room together.
Don't miss Orange Days, Ashley's biggest sale of the year. Get 80 months special financing on in-store purchases of $49.99 or more, made with your Ashley Advantage Synchronic credit card. March 4th through 10th at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store associate for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It was right there, and I let it slip away. Now I go days without eating on a beautiful dining table I actually like to look at. All I'm left with are should-haves, would-haves, could-haves, and those just don't tie a room together.
Don't miss Orange Days, Ashley's biggest sale of the year. Get 80 months special financing on in-store purchases of $49.99 or more, made with your Ashley Advantage Synchronic credit card. March 4th through 10th at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store associate for details.